WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacey Lynn. President Trump's special envoy to the Middle East will be heading to Saudi Arabia tonight, according to Steve Witkoff on Fox.
I'll be traveling there with the National Security Advisor, and we'll be having meetings at the direction of the president, and hopefully we'll make some really good progress with regard to Russia-Ukraine.
Those meetings are getting criticized as they're expected to be held without European leaders and Ukrainian President Zelensky, who told NBC,
"There is no any leader in the world who can really make a deal with Putin without us, about us."
Iceland's prime minister agreed.
Europe needs to be a part of this process. Ukraine needs to be a part of this process. If not, this type of ceasefire is not going to be credible.
Now to the war in the Middle East. Israel is sending negotiators to Cairo for more talks on a truce with Hamas. Prime Minister Netanyahu says they're going to be there tomorrow.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio defending President Trump's proposal to depopulate the Gaza Strip and relocate the 2 million Palestinians there.
It may have shocked and surprised many, but what cannot continue is the same cycle where we repeat over and over again and wind up in the exact same place.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said he's firmly on board. Jordan and Egypt have rejected the plan. EU leaders have called it deeply concerning. One UN investigator has called it ethnic cleansing. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
The Justice Department dropped New York City Mayor Eric Adams' corruption charges and will now help with President Trump's immigration enforcement. On CNN, Senator Amy Klobuchar bashed the decision.
They have literally taken the mayor of New York City, who was facing and is facing serious charges of bribery, which were going to be expanded, and they have turned him into their own political pawn.
Now, a judge still needs to sign off on the deal. Well, not a great weekend to be outside, with severe weather hitting many parts of the country. It's been deadly, too. One person in Georgia and eight in Kentucky have died due to weather-related deaths. Meteorologist Grant Gilmore tells us snow is the story up north.
Places like northern New York, upstate New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, they could see almost a foot, if not more than that, up to 18 inches of snow.
Now, high winds are happening in Florida. That has caused the Daytona 500 to start earlier today. NASCAR's most famous race kicks off in about a half hour. Cup Series drivers are getting ready to hit the gas for the 67th annual race, which President Trump is attending. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station.
Want to hear even more? Anytime?
Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Conservation groups are criticizing the Trump administration's new review of all oil, gas, and mining on public lands. Suzanne Potter reports.
New U.S. Interior Secretary Doug Burgum has ordered a 15-day internal review of these sites, which conservation groups warn could be a first step toward altering their boundaries to allow fossil fuel and mineral extraction. And yet, Daniel Hart with the National Parks Conservation Association says this would do little to address the energy emergency recently declared by President Donald Trump.
The timeline from starting a lease sale until oil and gas is pumping and then refined and into the markets is a long time. It would not immediately do anything to lower gas prices.
In the past, Carrizo Plain National Monument on the Central Coast has been eyed for oil and gas development. Other national monuments in California whose boundaries could be reevaluated include the two newest, Chuckwalla and Satitla National Monuments, along with 13 others across the state. Hart says these public lands are crucial for wildlife habitat and recreation, and he points out they pump billions of dollars into the outdoor economy.
They protect both natural and cultural resources. They are a great place for our shared histories, but also the public benefit. They support the outdoor recreation economy, especially in rural states.
Across the U.S., 24 million acres of public land are already leased to oil and gas companies for fossil fuel extraction, with over 12 million acres under active drilling. The NPCA says key monuments that risk losing protections include Devil's Tower in Wyoming and the Dinosaur and Hovensweep National Monuments in Utah. I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A little light snow will give way to mostly sunny skies with highs of the lower teens, and our winds will be out of the northwest, 5 to 10. Any accumulation of snow well under an inch. For tonight, partly cloudy, the low near 10 below. Currently 8 degrees.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller and Northeast Wisconsin hip-hop artist and musician Matt Harper joins me in studio. We're going to light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Holy cow, another week. You know, I said that we're in a pretty big stretch of guests here. Last week we had my friend and now yours, Congressman Adam Kinzinger. That was a really incredible discussion. And if you want to hear that or you want to hear this one again, every one of these episodes is available as a podcast on civicmedia.com. Because, hey, we got some powerhouse people. We have joining us our one old friend and one new friend. Dear old friend, Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. What's up, buddy?
Always good, happy to be here.
Dude, yes. We were just here a little while ago. I was like, yeah. We have to get like, you know, a chair saved for you here.
A nice little chair with my name on it. It'd be great.
Yes, embroidered microphone or something. Yeah. And he brings a friend with him who is a wonderful guy, Officer Harry Dunn, who was a Capitol Police officer. He's going to talk about what he's doing here, but also we're going to talk about what happened on January 6th, because we talked about that last week with Adam Kinzinger.
Yeah. No, happy to be here, man. And, you know, as long as people are trying to whitewash and downplay what happened that day, or minimize, or flat out erase it from our history, they'll meet my face pushing back against it.
Yeah, hey, and I appreciate that, because that, you know, it's your face and your name has become synonymous with January 6th.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I would rather have someone like yourself than someone like Donald Trump.
Well, thank you.
You know, yeah, because you represent the good that happened. That not a lot of good happened that day, but you held and you kept a lot of people safe.
I had a lot of people say that, you know, Officer Dunn, we're so sorry that we had to come to know you under these circumstances, but we're so glad that we know you now, fighting and standing up for what's right and continuing to do so, especially in a time where so many people have forgotten what that looks like.
You know, and in preparation for this discussion and then last week, I actually started reading the January 6th report. Holy crap, is that thing big.
You mean the one that Republicans have accused them of destroying and hiding?
Yeah.
Like, it's literally online. You just go.
Yeah. There's like an audio book as well. Mm-hmm. And it's 24 hours long, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I learned was how far in advance people learned, you know, knew about this. I learned that from Adam Kinzinger's book, you know, and on 1:42 in the morning on December 19th, Donald Trump tweeted out, "Big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there, will be wild." Talk about that day.
You know, where do I even start, man? Like, I mean, so many people knew in advance, sure. And I think that's one of the things that got me really frustrated with obviously what happened. Frontline officers, majority of the people that were there that day, not chiefs, not leadership, just the frontline beat officers. We see at the Capitol First Amendment protest all the time. Mm-hmm. People come in there protesting about anything. And that's what we expected it to be. I mean, for the most part, we expected a rest. They told us, hey, guys, some of y'all might have to stay late. We're expecting some, you know, potential first demonstration lockups, civil disobedience. Civil.
Yeah.
Keyword civil. Not a entire attempted takeover of the, you know, U.S. government. So, you know, I show up to work at 6:45 or so. We have a roll call at 7. And they're giving us our orders. I mean, listen, this is in the middle of COVID, too.
Yeah.
The Capitol's closed to the public. It had been closed for months. Washington, D.C., everybody's working from home. Traffic is a breeze getting in and out of, I mean, any major city, right? Think about it. COVID, nobody's working.
Yeah.
Well, everybody's working from home. So as first responders, we had the easiest commute going into work. No traffic. This was great. When you show up to work that morning, now, and this is obviously looking back at it, but going in, I didn't think anything, but you see people in the street and hundreds of people. I mean, it's 6 in the morning. I mean, middle of January. Now it's not Wisconsin cold, but I mean, it's 25 degrees out there, and it's,
right.
You know, 6 in the morning. People are out walking around, and it had flags, American flags. I'm like, this is crazy. So as the day continued to go on, the crowds at the Capitol just swelled. I mean, there were officers calling out, hey, we got a group of 100 people headed towards the Capitol from the White House, or hey, we have a group of 75 making their way to the Capitol from the direction of the Supreme Court. And it was just constantly over and over again, people putting out. And next thing you know, the Capitol is just saturated with people. It looked like a pep rally for Trump. I mean, you had individuals out there singing the national anthem. They were waving the flags. They playing cornhole. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but I mean, it just seemed like a pep rally.
Yeah.
And then one, I don't know what the actual action that caused the violence.
To turn, yeah.
But it just made an ugly turn. One of the things that made me realize before I believe it got violent was they discovered pipe bombs at the DNC and the RNC, respectively. And those two incidents combined with the continued saturation of people at the Capitol, it turned into like, a pressure cooker, almost like this is bad. This is bad. If it was a movie, like the dramatic, the music would be playing, the build up, and then
pop,
and that's kind of what happened. And for over 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever, officers, myself, my coworkers were fighting. Now people say we protected democracy, and I mean that's a hell of a byproduct, I believe, of what we did. We were just trying to stay alive and make it home to our families,
right. Protect
the members of Congress. I wasn't thinking in that moment, guys, we got to protect democracy.
Right.
I'm trying to stay alive. I got a daughter that I need to go home to. My coworkers had their husbands, their wives that they needed to go home to. And members of Congress, we need to protect every single hair on their head, whether it was Marjorie Taylor Greene, whether it was Ron Johnson, whether it was AOC, but whether it was AOC, whether it was Chuck Schumer, anybody, our job was to protect those individuals because that was our job.
And what's crazy is like you had to protect people like Ron Johnson who deny the very existence of what happened.
Calls it Antifa.
Right.
BLM, Black Lives Matter and Antifa. I mean, that was just despicable, but...
Yeah, and it was interesting, or the peaceful protest, which, by the way, one of the things I learned is, you know, in a peaceful protest, I didn't realize that those had people that would bring body armor or, you know, weapons and knives and bats and all those things. And one of the things that was interesting, too, in reading the report is how there was like 26,000 people in the Ellipse.
Yeah.
But Trump was pissed off because there were magnetometers. He wanted to go because they're not here for him. And there were just as many people outside who refused to go through the magnetometers.
Ugh.
Why is that? Because it's peaceful, clearly. And, you know, that was fascinating to hear. And then hear about everything that was confiscated from people that did go in.
Well, let's define what peaceful means, because I feel like we have to now.
Yeah, right.
Now, peaceful does not mean kumbaya out there
right.
in this day and age. Peaceful means we didn't get the hell beat out mm-hmm. of us. That's what peaceful meant.
Typically, now, there's no fatalities.
Yeah, typically, right?
Yes, right.
But these people were angry. Like yeah. I've been at quote peaceful protests where we got cussed out and, you know, but there was no violence towards us. So that's peaceful. The peaceful is in this, the way we're describing it is without violence.
Right.
Mm. It wasn't with peace. Because when people protest, people are very passionate about the things. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. And then, you know, a lot of times police officers or the security or whatever, we're just the lightning rod that takes the brunt of it. But this case, we were standing in the way of these insurrectionists who called us traitors, who called us that we were not upholding our oath. And we were in their way stopping them. From stopping the certification of the election, we were the traitors. We were the bad guys that day. Make that make sense.
It's interesting, and it's so well put how you call January 6th the most well-documented crime scene in history. That's so, like, on point.
One of the things people, Donald Trump, Republicans, Ron Johnson, all these people have said, we're the Democrats or the left or doing Joe Biden's DOJ are trying to shape the narrative about January 6th. There's no narrative to shape. Turn your TV down on silent and just press play.
Yep.
Nobody has to say a word. I don't have to say a word. Joe Biden didn't have to say a word. Press play.
Michelle,
and you tell me, like,
Michelle Bachmann said, like a week ago, I believe, she said that if you would see the images from January 6th, it would represent more a March for Life protest than it would anything violent. I don't know how you make that leap.
She's a liar.
She's insane.
She's a liar. She's insane. She's delusional.
Yeah.
Because, okay, you know what? Everybody listen now. Pull out your phone. And Google March for Life, Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Okay? Do that. Compare that. Now Google January 6, 2021, U.S. Capitol. Now compare the two. I've worked March for Life protests. There were people just marching, and they would march to the Supreme Court, and they were singing, reading Bible verses. Yes, they were very peaceful, even and really peaceful. They weren't cussing us out. They were so nice and friendly to us.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave us candy bars. They were really nice to us at the March for Life.
Yeah,
that didn't happen on January 6th. Give me a break.
No. And it's, you know, it's it really is a wild stretch to go from, you know, seeing what happened. I remember what happened.
Yeah.
I don't remember like you, but I remember seeing everything that happened. And I mean, maybe there was a peaceful-ish moment at the Ellipse when Donald Trump was talking about, but because all of the weapons were taken away, what happened at the Capitol was not peaceful whatsoever.
At all.
No. And thank you for that. I'm going to wrap this up about this topic, and we're going to go into why you're here. Here at in the next segment, we're going to hear from our friend Ahmad Rivera-Wagner. What's up, buddy?
Hey.
So we'll be right back here in the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You want to feel important.
You want to be part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things.
You want to feel like you belong.
We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it.
We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers.
We are normal people just like you. But our part-time service in the Army National Guard means we get to be more.
When our communities are in need, we get the chance to stand up and do something about it.
We get to serve in our own region and help the people we call neighbors.
From the lake shores of Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
The fertile fields of Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa to the wide open plains of North and South Dakota.
We are here for our hometowns.
And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back. We got Officer Harry Dunn. We got Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. And me, some guy on the show. I have to say, Officer Dunn, I listened today to your testimony for the first time. And that was really, really hard to hear. As a white guy who knows better, as a white guy who's in a mixed marriage, who has mixed race children, hearing that, it was upsetting. And I'm really sorry you went through that.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that sentiment. I will say this. I don't like people apologizing for what I went through that didn't have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I accept your I accept it, but the people who need to apologize aren't. And I don't think that you should have to apologize on their behalf. And I understand. I get it. Yeah, I receive it. But let's stop apologizing. Not you, but we got to stop apologizing for what other people are doing that's foolish and hold them accountable and make them own it. It's not on us.
It was interesting, you know, last week, Adam Kinzinger, who does send his best.
Love Adam. Hey, Adam.
Yeah, I'll text him after. Yeah. He had really good things to say about you.
Yeah.
But he said, because we talked about this, and he said, you know, I was almost ready to put January 6th behind me. And he said, I think America was almost ready to put January 6th behind us. And then Trump got elected, and then 1,500 plus people who should have been in prison were released.
Let back on the street.
How did you feel about that?
You know, so my thoughts when it comes to the pardons, look, that's what Donald Trump said he was going to do it. He said he was from day one. I spent a lot of time here in Wisconsin campaigning hard to keep him out of the White House. That's why me and a couple officers did. We knew that this was coming.
Yeah.
So when he did it, it wasn't a surprise for me. I mean, so I had time to prepare, right? But it still was a gut punch. Like it still was. Yeah. It still was. But my biggest anger. And I, you know, I love people who believe in democracy and all this stuff, but everybody that's shocked and surprised that he did it, where were you before he did it? If you're shocked and surprised, that means you weren't paying attention to what he said he was going to do before the election. Yeah.
I have it in my notes that, you know, we saw it coming and you hope it's not going to happen. And even though you get this thing in the back of your head knowing it's coming. But when that reality hits, what did you talk about? We'll bring him on in here. What do you?
Well, one of the reasons I'm inspired by Officer Dunn is, you know, January 6th is somewhat infamous here in Green Bay.
Yeah, right.
One.
Oh, with you?
Right.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, just this January 6th, we got sworn in, one of the fairest maps we've ever had. So I have this one memory of January 6th, which is literally littered with nothing but joy, bipartisan camaraderie, celebration. We saw meemaws and grandchildren. We saw aunts and uncles. You know, this beautiful moment on this January 6th. 4 years to the day, I was sitting in my office because we had to essentially evacuate City Hall because we had gotten information leading right after the election that there was going to be protests. And we saw buses being led by leaders of white supremacy groups recruiting people to go to the Capitol and some people recruiting them to protest at one point the mayor's house.
Yep.
But then they changed it to the City Hall.
Yep.
in the preparation, as we started seeing this, we were warning the FBI, mm-hmm. we're warning other people, something is going on. We started seeing warning signs where they were actually preparing. For example, we found screenshots later of the planning group saying that government's going to be shut down for a couple months, that you should bring water and food, and you should bring groceries home, that you should get flashlights and batteries. And then on January 6th, when I sat inside my office, one of the few people still there, we had people calling for the Proud Boys to come get me, the mayor, and the first black clerk in the city's history, saying that we personally stole the election for Joe Biden. And so January 6th, and then...
And she served Republicans and Democrats the last
time. Right. And then what was terrifying is I had friends that were working in the Capitol. All of a sudden, it was like the world went silent.
Yeah.
And they just dispersed. And no one knew what was happening. And I started getting the trickle-in text that they're trying to kill us. They're breaking into the building. And then they just stopped communicating. And so then I ran home. My husband calls me and says, I need you to be home. We turn on the TV and we literally saw the Capitol on fire. And that began years of stalking, mm-hmm. harassing. They believed that I was a Facebook employee that made up getting married to my husband. So they started stalking him at the hospitals to find him. We got racist epithets. We got homophobic slurs. We had them vandalize my car. We had one person who was so convinced that we were hiding that he physically assaulted a city employee when they went to go look at him. Yeah. We had to press charges against him. So January 6th to me not only was both criminal in its process, the ripple effects reverberated across the country to all these places like Green Bay, Wisconsin, that for years spent trying to defend itself against lies and innuendos, from the ridiculous, like that there are midgets in the machines flipping the ballots, to the serious, where they were asking for my birth records to see, because they thought I was undocumented and I was imported from the Middle East. And so, you know, what you went through, we only have a small taste of it. But part of the reason what we were excited to bring him is that democracy doesn't only work when it works in your favor. That democracy is meant to be defended up and down the ballot, whether you win or not, and that we have to hold the people accountable that choose violence and the threat of violence as the answer to get their neighbor, friend, resident to vote in a certain way. And so we need to hold all elected officials accountable. Democrats that were afraid to hold them accountable, and Republicans that are justifying this at every level of the ballot. We had these issues at the local Common Council where they refused to acknowledge the election results. We watched Supreme Court candidates. We watched U.S. Senate candidates. We watched gubernatorial candidates all say that January 6th wasn't a bad thing. It should be bipartisan to condemn the actions that happened to the officer. So we're here to have a real conversation in one of the places where democracy was threatened deeply, to talk about how do we hold each other accountable for building a stronger and believing in a stronger democracy, but how do we talk to the people who use violence as the currency for their democracy and hold them accountable?
It really is something that just boggles my mind how, you know, you could see something so raw, so true. Okay, it happened. It happened.
Yeah.
And it, like you say, it happened whether you want to listen to the commentary of the talking heads on the news guiding you through what's happening, or just shut the damn TV off and see for yourself that happened. And then you have this whole group of people trying to whitewash it, trying to say it was peaceful, trying to I don't understand how that group of people can take something so obviously true and turn that into, nope, that was...
Well, you know what?
Oh, and we'll finish that thought here.
Yeah.
That was Officer Dunn here on the other side of the break here on the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
CBS News Brief. Special envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, told Fox he's heading to Saudi Arabia tonight for talks to end the Russian war in Ukraine. As for whether those discussions would include Ukraine and other European countries...
I think Ukraine is part of the talks. The president had their president, Zelensky, on the phone this past week.
Secretary of State Rubio was in Jerusalem today meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. He told Face the Nation,
"We share the goal that every hostage needs to come home, every single one, without delay. Obviously, there are details of how we're pursuing that."
Israel sending negotiators to Cairo tomorrow for more ceasefire talks. Sunday prayers were held without the Pope today. This man was visiting from the U.S.
We expected to have a papal blessing today, but we're not getting that. But we said a prayer for him instead.
Pope Francis spent the night in the hospital again being treated for bronchitis. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin shuts down Purdue. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In men's college basketball, the number 16th ranked Wisconsin Badgers upset 7th ranked Purdue, 94-84. The Badgers running into foul trouble early, followed by Kamari McGee ejected for a flagrant 2 foul. But Wisconsin took over in the second half. Greg Gard says Purdue, a tough place to get a win.
Phenomenal environment. They do it right here in terms of the crowd and against a really good team. But I thought, obviously, super impressed with my own team. You know, first half, that was a little rocky. You know, McGee has to hit the showers early and have other guys unite even more, and guys like Janicki step up and make tremendous plays in the second half. Couldn't be happier for our guys, because coming in here to be able to play like we did and then finish it out.
John Tanjay leading the Badgers with 32 points. Up next, Wisconsin to host Illinois on Tuesday night at the Kohl Center. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A little light snow will give way to mostly sunny skies with highs of the lower teens, and our winds will be out of the northwest, 5 to 10. Any accumulation of snow well under an inch. For tonight, partly cloudy, the low near 10 below. Currently 8 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. While attacks on democracy norms ensue in Washington, state legislatures have also been busy. We have updates from Utah, Kansas, Indiana, and the contested North Carolina Supreme Court race. Voting Rights Lab reports that the Utah House is considering HB 300, which forces mail-in ballot users to deliver their ballot not by mail, but by hand to an official polling place where an ID can be presented. The elderly, disabled, and other voters for whom returning by mail is their only option would need to seek special permission. HB 332 would withdraw Utah from the Cooperative Electronic Registration Data Center, the subject of far-right conspiracy theories. The Kansas Senate passed SB 4, which requires receipt of mail-in ballots by 7 p.m. Election Day to count, rather than the current 3 days after. An Indiana Senate committee advanced SB 284, shortening early in-person voting from 28 days to 14 days, ending at noon the day before Election Day. The full Senate passed SB 10, ending use of school-issued student identification as ID for voting. In North Carolina, a district court judge dismissed a claim by a state Supreme Court candidate that in a race he lost by 734 votes, as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible. A federal appeals court may revisit it. We've linked the Voting Rights Lab tracker at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Earl Ingram.
Mayor Johnson, we used to have a saying called the switcheroo. Talking about one thing while behind the scenes there's a greater issue.
This man was elected president of the United States to focus in on making everyday life more affordable. But our push to remove lead service lines, our health department, are impacted by the things that the Trump administration have targeted since they've been in office. Yeah, it's been a huge switcheroo. It's not been about saving folks money. I mean, this is going to cause more pain.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look back at the weekend's headlines and give a preview to the spring primary election on Tuesday. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I hope hope you guys made it through the break, because I had a guy here to my left chomping at the bit. We were talking about how someone can take something so real and twist it. And Officer Harry Dunn here from the Capitol Police.
Yeah, you know, listen, right after January 6th, I mean, like, immediate, the night of, the day after, the day, Republican leaders, Republican members of Congress,
right.
Lindsey Graham specifically, I'm done. Count me out. Yeah. I'm done with him.
Kevin McCarthy.
The Donald Trump, the president bears responsibility for what happened. Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump is morally responsible for what happened. Every single one said that. Mm-hmm. All of the Republican leaders. You know what happened? Donald Trump got to them. And they said, nope, you're right. You're right, Mr. We have to stick with you. And they failed to condemn him. This was their opportunity to be done with Donald Trump. And this isn't about Republicanism, liberal, conservative. This isn't about that. It's just about doing what's right.
Mm-hmm.
They had the opportunity to do it. And you know what? Like, it's political suicide to go against Donald Trump.
It is. And that's what Ron Johnson said. And you know, it's funny and it's crazy. On January 7th, my article that I wrote about Ron Johnson saying it was political suicide that kind of blew up. That I didn't hear from him for a month. As it dropped, we were talking about December 1st is when my article about him was released. On January 7th, he sends me a text out of the blue saying I'm a low-life weasel and like calling me names and all of this stuff. And I respond back to him. I said, Ron, they're cleaning up blood on the floor of your workplace. In the halls of democracy, they're cleaning up someone's blood who was murdered.
Yeah.
And you're worried about me?
Why didn't he say that to Donald Trump?
Right.
Send that text to Donald Trump, Ron.
Right.
It's pathetic. So that's what they want to do. They know that it's wrong.
Yeah.
They know that they don't have the moral courage to speak out against it because it's political suicide. Damn my career if I have to cave to my morals and values, which so many people in the Republican side have done. Ron Johnson, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, Kevin McCarthy, all of you have caved to Donald Trump, and you have zero moral courage or character. You can't do it. And you know what? What's happening now? And if I can talk about why I'm here now.
Yeah, please, absolutely.
I'm here now because here in Wisconsin, there's an individual running for the Supreme Court, April the 1st, Bradley Schimmel. Listen, I couldn't tell you 2-3 policies that Bradley Schimmel has. But I can tell you one thing. He failed to condemn President Trump for pardoning the people who attacked us. In fact, he doubled down and said those people couldn't get a fair trial and that Donald Trump has the right to do. So what he said, he tries to say if you attacked law enforcement, you should be held accountable. But then he turns around and says Donald Trump has the ability to pardon who he wants.
The party of back the blue.
So what Bradley Schimmel is doing, what he's doing is playing both sides. So Donald Trump, he won't draw Donald Trump's ire because what? It's political suicide. The point is you can't play both sides when it comes to this.
That's right.
The only acceptable response is Donald Trump is wrong for pardoning the people who attacked law enforcement. Period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No asterisk next to it. No further explanation needed. You're wrong for what you did. But we can't get there. And that's why I'm here.
Yeah, about that.
You know, if he didn't make those comments, I'm probably not here right now. I mean, I love Wisconsin. So maybe not when it's 5 degrees outside, you know. But I probably wouldn't be here right now. Like I said, I couldn't tell you his policy on any other stance. But anytime anybody is downplaying or minimizing what me and my coworkers went through, I'm going to push back. Especially if that individual happens to be running for a trusted public office. So if we can't trust you to stand up and do what's right, how can the people of Wisconsin trust you that you'll continue to believe and serve, faithfully discharge the duties of a Supreme Court justice?
Right.
If they can't even count on you to do what's morally right and condemn violence against police officers.
That oath says all enemies, foreign and domestic.
And we got a lot of domestic ones.
Yeah.
Christopher Wray, you know, the former FBI director, said that these people were domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, and you know, and it's insane how, you know, Kevin McCarthy that night found his moral courage only to lose it weeks later when he was, you know, I was just down by, I was in the neighborhood of Mar-a-Lago.
He was summoned.
Just wanted to go say hi.
He was summoned.
You know, and it's reprehensible. And what, you know, what do you think about this?
I mean, one of the reasons I'm excited to have Officer Dunn here is I do think that January 6th and what happened in the aftermath also represents the worst of this country. But the years that preceded was a lot of the ways in which we organized people around, not right and left, but as you love to say,
yes,
right and wrong.
Yes.
And one of the things, we saw that here, right? We had a MAGA council who were trying to defund our clerk's department, who was giving aid and room for Michael Gableman to spend up to $2 to $4 million of taxpayer dollars just trying to justify the January 6th attacks by saying that there was election interference that never manifested itself, that we had another investigation by the state Senate into the city. But what we saw is when we stopped taking, when we took the politics out and we actually said, what do we believe as a community is right and wrong? What we saw is a complete change in the politics of our community. Mm-hmm. That we literally went from Gableman announcing his investigation at the Common Council in Green Bay, Wisconsin, to having a pro-democracy majority, to re-electing the mayor of Green Bay, to electing Judge Janet Persiowicz, and electing the first openly gay biracial guy ever to represent Wisconsin. And because, not because of those identities, but because we turned into this community versus on it or on each other. And I think that's what I want to make sure, and I'm excited about having the officer here, is because that is what's happening. And while national politics may not reflect that, what we've seen is when we actually tell the truth, that we reflect the things that are happening in our communities, and we tell people to make a choice about their values. Places like Green Bay choose each other.
Yeah.
They choose to be neighborly. They choose to condemn the attacks on police officers. They condemn the acts of violence that happen in any type of protest. And that is the vast majority of people in this country, the vast majority of people in the state and in the city. And so I wanted to bring him here to remind everybody that regardless of what's happening at the national level, we cannot buy into the idea that these types of actions, this kind of violence, should go away. Yeah. It should be ignored, that people should be held accountable, both in courts of law, but even at the ballot box, that we have to vote our values. And our values is that we take care of each other and we respect the people who protect us and protect our democracy. And we can never lose sight of that.
Yeah. And I know I appreciate, you know, you're putting up temporary residence here. You were here with, you were here supporting our dear friend, Kristen Lyerly.
Yeah, love Kristen.
Is, she's a wonderful person, dear friend to all of us. And you're back, you know. And how can people support what you do?
Well, see, I'm an American citizen, a person who loves and cares about his country. Mm-hmm. Before I'm Officer Dunn.
You know what? Before you keep going, one of the things that I think you would like this because this will go really well. On Inauguration Day, I texted Kinzinger and I asked him, "How you doing, bud?" Because he just got his pardon from Biden, which he didn't know was coming. And
I
all
did
that.
Too.
Oh yes, right, right.
President, I got a pardon.
From right, Biden. Holy crap! Yeah. I asked him. I'm like, "How are you feeling?" And he goes, "This sucks, but I am still optimistic." You know,
he said the same thing when we've talked. But listen, I love this country, and I'm going to fight for it. Not as an officer, Joe Biden, and you talked earlier, Ahmad, about January 6th being a memorable date. Joe Biden turned around my January 6th a year after that when he presented me with the Presidential Citizens Medal.
Yeah.
So he turned one of the darkest days into one of the proudest days of my life. And I appreciate that. But when I accepted that medal, I didn't accept a lot of my coworkers. They wore their uniforms. They wore their police uniforms to shine. I wore a suit because I didn't accept it as Officer Harry Dunn. I accepted as Citizen Harry Dunn because I am doing this work that I'm doing. It wasn't as an officer. It's just because I care about this country. I care about what's right. So that's why I'm out here. I started a PAC. I know Harry Dunn's Democracy Defenders, Democracy Defenders PAC. You could check that out. I have a Substack. It's called Standing Our Ground. And I just want to just reach people where they are. Mm. I mean, I am all across the country. I just endorsed the governor's race in Michigan, and Jocelyn Benson. We'll be looking at New Jersey, Virginia. I mean, there's so much we can do before 2026, the midterms. April 1st. Yeah. April 1st here. Just please check it out. I wrote a book called Standing My Ground, Capitol Police Officers Fight for Accountability After January 6th. And you know what? A lot of people have said, let's move on from January 6th. You know, I would love nothing more. I would love nothing more to.
That'd be great.
But
right?
We move on once you have accountability.
Correct.
And also, Donald Trump keeps bringing up January 6th.
Right.
On Sunday, on Air Force One, he said that the government attacked the January 6th rioters. The police officers was wrong to attack those people. Mm. And he said this on Sunday.
Right.
So he's still bringing it up. And, you know, as long as you are, I'm going to keep showing up.
So. Well, and it's so funny because he says that on Air Force One, and then he goes to the Super Bowl and says, we love our law enforcement. Shut the hell up. No, you do not, because you cannot have both things.
You
cannot love your law enforcement and back the blue and then let out 1,500 people who beat the hell out of police officers and killed one of them, killed multiple.
Well, the only logical reason I could think, he doesn't view us as law enforcement officers. He viewed us as people who stopped his plan. We were obstacles. So he doesn't see us as police officers. So maybe he supports people that actually believe in upholding the rule of law.
Republican police officers.
I can say
that.
Right? Yeah, I won't say that because I got friends that are Republicans.
I do too.
I mean, I do too.
I don't even think it's just about Republican police officers. It's if you agree with him or not.
Right.
There was a time, as you were saying really earlier, there was a time where there was bipartisan condemnation of what was happening. It was, honestly, we were all like, maybe this is
Mike
the
Gallagher.
Moment. Right.
Yeah.
And we had the local, and I always like to bring it back local, we had Mike Gallagher just opposing a nominee where folks used violent rhetoric and swatted him and his family, his newborn babies, right? Here, right in the 8th Congressional District, because they didn't agree with Donald Trump. He didn't agree with the impeachment of this particular person. And those MAGA extremists decided, despite being a lifelong Republican, probably one of the rising stars of the Republican Party, and who was so violently attacked verbally and his family, that is now out of politics. And I think we just need to realize that this is, you and I love you say this all the time, it really, as in this moment, it's not always as right and left. It really is about right and wrong.
Yeah.
And even Republicans that do not agree with them, they're willing to use these tactics and methodologies and apologize for their violence. And we have to hold people accountable.
Kinzinger had to move half a country away.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like it's wild. And you also have a podcast, Clean Up on Aisle 45.
Clean Up on Aisle 45.
I love that title.
Yeah, that's
hilarious.
People have wondered, like, we can get that wherever. Clean Up on Aisle 45. That's actually,
I love it.
I enjoy doing that. We just talk about the happenings of the Justice Department, Trump's Justice Department. Now, one thing I noticed about the Trump's Justice Department, by the way, the DOJ for the last couple of years have always been the plaintiffs and going after people. This administration, the 3 weeks old, they sure are doing a lot of time on the defensive right now.
Yeah, Trump's used to being a defendant.
So it may only make sense that the DOJ is literally the defendant in every court case.
So we got 30 seconds. I want to know what makes you hopeful about our future.
People are still talking about it. People care. Mm-hmm. And that's what, listen, everybody listening, form an opinion, get educated about your candidate. Before election day. Don't wait till after election day to have an opinion. The time is now. Let's not wait till 2026. Get involved now.
Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn, my dear friend, Representative Amato Vera Wagner. You guys, this was amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You got a friend for life. Rational Revolution, we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap. I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Believe it or not, it is once again time for Wisconsinites to head to the polls and vote. I know, we all have a bit of election fatigue after 2024, but the spring election primary is coming up on Tuesday, February 18th. One race that will be on every ballot statewide for the spring primary is for state superintendent. Incumbent Jill Underley is seeking another term, and two candidates are challenging her. Jeff Wright, superintendent for Sauk Prairie Schools, and Brittany Kinzer, an education consultant and former charter school executive. Kinzer's candidacy, in particular, is gaining steam. Her campaign reported raising more than $500,000, far more than what Underley or Wright have brought in. With that type of financial support, this could prove to be a more competitive race for state superintendent than what we've seen in quite some time. This is becoming a real race to watch.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I don't know how to follow that up. I just play music for 5 minutes and I'll shut up. And it's like, wow, that was an incredible discussion. Officer Harry Dunn from the Capitol Police, who was part of January 6th, you know, one of the heroes, and was brought here by our dear friend, Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. That was amazing. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. But first and foremost, doing this, yeah, I don't realize there's other people on the other side of the microphone. We got a voicemail from our dear friend Ellen in Cedarburg. I heard you, Ellen. I love that. Thank you so much, and I appreciate you listening. So I really wanted to give her a shout out. But so back to all of this. It was interesting to hear Officer Dunn say that what gives him hope was that people keep talking about it and people don't forget. And I think that's so important because they're trying so damn hard to get you to forget. And people will tell you, yeah, we're going to get past January 6th. Don't ever, ever forget it. And, you know, what happened, it's so much bigger than the attack. The attack was terrible, and I don't want to downplay it, but January 6th, it symbolizes just like everything that is wrong with this type of politics, with Trumpism. I'll say it, with Trumpism. And this is why people harp on this, and this is why, you know, we talk about this, and it's so important because, like, everything, all of the bad stuff, everything from that 4 years of a pressure cooker that happened, you know, leading up to January 6th, it all exploded. You know, from COVID to the Black Lives Matter protests and all of the stuff that Trump did to bring us to that point. He did what he always does, and he threw a 55-gallon drum of diesel fuel on that fire. And wouldn't you know it, it exploded. And I don't understand the people, you know, who know better but don't do better. I don't understand. And what I mean by that is we talked about it, how people can see what happened with their own eyes. They can see what was there. They know what happened on January 6th. It doesn't take someone with any formal education whatsoever. My 4-year-old daughter would watch that video and say, those guys are the bad guys. And I don't understand how people can internalize keeping that bold-faced lie going. It goes against everything you were taught as a child, I hope. Everything you were taught as a child. Right from wrong. Bad from good. How to treat people with kindness. And I don't understand that. You know, one of the things I also learned when I was reading the January 6th committee report. Did you know that Sidney Powell, who was Donald Trump's lawyer, throughout this whole thing, and who would you know, throw all of these crazy accusations of 30,000 dead people voting and all this, you know, a truckload of ballots coming down from New York and going into Pennsylvania, which, by the way, how this worked, if you have time, you can read the audiobook too. It's 24 hours, by the way. How this worked is one day, at late afternoon, Donald Trump would hear these facts of, you know, okay, the FBI would come and say, Mr. Trump, no, there was not 30,000 dead people that were voting. We did find two who voted by absentee, and they did die in this precinct. So there was two in this whole state. So he knew the truth. He knew the truth. And the very next day, he would go on the news and tweet out. He would say 30,000 dead people are voting, when he knows, he was told hours before, that it's BS. And so Sidney Powell, who was the lawyer, you know, the crackpot lawyer that was throwing all these accusations out there, this was her defense. When she had to go face a judge, and the judge was like, dude, what the hell was that all about? Right? You know, he didn't say that, but, you know, we're paraphrasing here. Her defense for herself was, and I quote, no reasonable person would conclude that her statements were truly statements of facts. I'll read that again. Her defense was, no reasonable person would conclude that her statements were truly statements of fact. So her defense of why she did all of this was, I can't possibly be guilty because all of this stuff was so crazy, y'all should have known that I was lying. That was, and look it up, that was her defense. And the hypocrisy of all of this is that the F your feelings crowd, right? We all say, oh, screw your feelings. It's the Trump derangement syndrome. You're just suffering from, you know, liberal snowflake. Okay, those people is cheering on someone whose goal in everything he does is to jab and poke and everything from, you know, renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America to Denali, Fort Bragg, talk about we're going to use plastic straws again. We're going to make straws great. All of that stuff, it's nothing burgers. It is just strictly designed to piss off people who don't like them. And then the second someone takes exception to that, like to say, well, that's really stupid. It's been the Gulf of Mexico for like, what, 500 years? Oh, my goodness. How could you? That's just. And so you had 4 years of that leading up to January 6th. And wouldn't you know it, all hell broke loose and people died. And thanks to people like Officer Harry Dunn, a lot more people could have died, but didn't. And so this is why it's so important. You know, and I agree with Adam Kinzinger. Boy, before Donald Trump, I was at the point where it's like, yeah, okay, we can kind of get past this. Not anymore. There is no excuse for giving a pass to this. And the only way that we are going to overcome, the only way that this gets better, is when those people receive justice and those people who egged it on are no longer shuffling around the halls of power in the United States of America. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And we will talk to you next week.
This is 93.5 The Tap. Earl Ingram.
We'll be driving to a significant moment in American history with a special Black History lesson featuring guest historian Professor Bob Harvey. Later in the show, we'll also welcome Reggie Jackson.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Marquette University professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin.
Deporting immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. 60% support that. But when we ask the same question and just add at the end, including those with jobs and no criminal record, then support drops to just 43%.
Wisconsinites have a sense of fairness.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacey Lynn. Heavy rain and major flooding have caused one death in Georgia and in Kentucky.
Even with the incredible response that we've seen, we can confirm that we've lost at least 8 Kentuckians due to this weather event.
Governor Andy Beshear says they've had 1,000 water rescues so far.
This is the search and rescue phase, and I am very proud of all the Kentuckians that are out there responding, putting their lives on the line to help others.
President Trump has approved Beshear's request for an emergency disaster declaration for the state. FEMA is now there to assist. The latest devastation comes just 2 years after catastrophic flooding left 43 people dead and nearly leveled parts of the state. Meteorologist Grant Gilmore tells us dangerously cold Arctic air is moving into the northern part of the country.
Some places in North Dakota are looking at actual